I just would like to share with you two simple things that may not be too simple. Reading human history, if you read just west to east, east to west, kind of you find something very interesting. Age specification may not be clearly correct, because as we go to the ancient times, we don't exactly know when it happened. For instance, we don't exactly know when Jesus was born. Give or take 5,200 years timeline. But nobody can exactly pinpoint that's the year he was born. Well, if you come to East for the Buddha, it's almost a couple of hundred years to 500 years. So, give or take between 800 BC to 300 BC, many things happened both in the East and the West. The West, the Greek philosophers were born, their first time acknowledging that worshiping God may not be just for the gods, but it is about our inner satisfaction. So we're not just doing it for God, but we're actually doing it because there's a certain inner sensation that we get by doing this. Human beings are psychological beings. We have a depth inside. We have an inner need to be satisfied, not with materials. And out of that, actually, in the West, it developed somewhat logical, rational approach to cultivation. And Socrates was born somewhere around 500 BC. Well, about the same time, if you move to the east side, there is a famous person called Zoroaster, who was born about 500 BC. I mean, again, timelines are really, really, you know, loose here. And he talked about, well, gods are not really fighting about the earth. They're fighting over our soul. And the battle between good and evil is happening in our heart, in our minds, in our spirits. There is forces of good and forces of evil fighting. We're in between. Come little toward this, there's a Buddha. It's supposedly he was born around what? 500-600 BC. He talked about enlightenment is not to be gained by torturing and being patient and ignoring the pain in the body. Enlightenment is about changing the perspective, changing the inner attitude. Enlightened means a change, a profound change of your inner self, not your body. Therefore, he cultivated meditation, he promoted meditation, out of that Buddhism came. If you move to farther east, actually in about the same time Confucius was born, Lao Tzu was there, they're both founders of Confucianism and Taoism. And Confucian philosophy talks about what? In a way, very interestingly, he talks about to really govern people, you have to be virtuous. And this virtue is inside. And to be virtuous, you have to overcome yourself. Isn't that interesting? Do you think it's all coincidence? That somehow the whole world got into almost like same zone, talking about similar things. They're suddenly talking about there is inside, not just outside. So, we're talking about joy. Can we fake it? Can we make it? Can you make a joy in your heart? It means, do you really control your own heart and mind? It's yours, but do you control it? Are you in charge of it? And the most obvious question is, why not? After all, it's your mind. Now, that's where human ambition comes in. I can't even control myself, but my desire is to control all of you. Is that wise? That's why controlling or desire to control is the first thing that gets us in trouble. I can't even control myself. How come I expect and desire that everything else should align the way I like to see? That's such an illusion. So, where does joy come from? That's the second part, is that reading the Bible, to me, it's such an amazing, it's just one book. I mean, you can argue and I will have to agree with you, whatever point you make. But my point is that it's just one book, one story. In the beginning, creation, this outer part was formed out of the ground, the dirt, material. But it was not human yet. A man here means not a male. You know that, right? In ancient Hebrew, a man means a human. It's not a male compared to female. It's just a man, a human. But this human, to be fully human, has to take something from God, breath of life. So here comes the question, which part is really human then? The body that is from the ground, or the spirit that is from God? Which part is really you? That's your battle. That's your battle. You can be God's own, or you can be world's own. We can be spiritual, we can be materialistic. We can be selfish, we can be selfless. This amazing thing is described by this, in this beautiful garden created by God, has two very interesting trees. And don't ask about that because I wrote a thesis about it, so I need about 3 hours to explain it. But tree of life, amazing life, it's in that tree. And if you take it and eat the fruit of it, you'll live forever, right? It was right there. But at the same time, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. This is the first time the word evil is mentioned in the whole Bible. And it's not by human who named it. It's God who named it. And there's a reason for it. Innately, you know why design comes that we are both spiritual and material. We're both selfish and selfless. We're both godly and worldly. And our life is about choosing which side to belong forever. Which side is really mine. So it's like whenever, you know, smart children knows the answer to this question. Who do you like better, mom or dad? Amazingly, without teaching them, after saying a few times, mom or dad only, and they see that mom's not happy when it says dad, they pick it up. And they start to say, I love mom and dad and Roy and grandmas and grandpas. That's what Joanne goes. She mentions everybody that she knows. So who do you like really better, mom or dad? I like mom and dad, Roy. Isn't that amazing? In a way, it's a very hard battle to fight because it's like mom and dad. Okay? Being worldly is not a bad thing. It's not an evil thing to begin with. That's where we begin. Problem only happens if we're stuck there. And it gets worse if we deny the other side, that we have a spiritual side. It gets worse and worse the more we deny about it. But condemning worldly as evil is not right either. I mean, I have a beautiful two children, but they're very worldly. And I love them. And I don't blame them. That's where they should be. And they're very selfish too. And I don't blame them either. I just try to teach them that's not the right way to be. You know, I was sharing just one thing with the class before the Sunday school was that the Joanne's world right now, everything that belongs to her is good. Everything that's not hers cannot be good. Very simple. In a way of saying, it's mine, so it's good. It's not mine. How could that be good? It's not mine. That's where we begin. Now, are you going to stay there? That's where this message is very powerful, actually. And John confirms that. The true light comes to his own. You know the word his own, my own? In Latin, Swedenborg uses that word a lot. It's called proprium. And when we use it, it's called man's own, meaning that this is something that we have ownership of, or we desire to have ownership of in this world that is created by God. Essentially, we don't own anything here, but we want to have claim. When it says it's God's own, what does that mean then? You are of God. You share, in essence, something that is identical with God. Isn't that amazing? You are God's own. That means you have something that is similar as God is. You can be like God. And that's the message in the Old Testament. That's the message in the New Testament. And this God is peace, hope, joy, and love. So, when you read the human history, the religion we have been creating is not exactly 100% reflection of this true God. It's more of a reflection of human, us. So in this season, today is joy. I don't know how to make joy either, but this is one thing I can share in my observation to my children, especially Joanne. I think she's one of the most joyful human beings I have ever encountered in my entire life. Most joyful. And a lot of you who knows her well may agree with me. She is usually very cheerful and joyful, but she has to have a certain conditions met. You know, one, there shouldn't be any threat. She has to feel she is safe. Isn't that amazing? She has to be content and fed. Does mean that one? She doesn't have any need right now. And her stomach shouldn't be empty. Those two are preconditions, but that doesn't make her actually joyful. She also has to fully know that she has some people loving her around and to whom she can express her love. I can see that. She plays and just runs to mom and dad sometimes saying, hug and kiss and I love you. And then she goes back. I'm like, I thought you were going to stay with me. But no, that's all she wanted. But then she's, you know, humming again. But when that is broken, then she cries. Like when she feels mom and dad is kind of mad at her or not happy with her, or she feels there's a threat, something makes her afraid, or she's not, you know, her stomach is empty, then she cannot be joyful. But most important of all is she has to know experientially that she has not only people who love her, but to whom she can express her love. That makes her joyful. And I believe this equation works for all of us. We just do not acknowledge it fully and appreciate it in everyday life. It's a blessing, actually, if you have somebody who loves you dearly. But also, it's more blessing if you have somebody to whom you can express your love. And it's just this mutual circle, cycle of this, that triggers joy inside. And this joy is quite powerful. So may you be blessed to receive and to give your love in this season and receive this inner joy that is called heavenly joy. Amen.